Hello, this is Jesse Liberty, and this is yet another podcast.
Today I have my co-host John Galloway with me, and with us is Mary Jo Foley, editor of ZDNet's All About Microsoft blog, co-host of Windows Weekly, and by consensus, the most influential commentator on Microsoft in the business. Mary Jo, how are you?
Wow, that's an intro. Thanks. I'm great.
Oh, great. And thank you so much for joining us here. This is terrific. We set this up before Build specifically to be able to talk after Build about the conference. So in a nutshell, what did you think?
I always liked Build and its predecessor, the PDC. It always has been one of my favorite Microsoft shows because you really get to talk to a lot of developers there and also really dig into topics that get short shrift a lot of times in other forums. So even though it was in a tent this year, which was interesting, I still liked it a lot, and I thought there was a lot of interesting things going on there. The keynotes were very interesting, and I'm sad I couldn't stay longer. I actually had another commitment, so I was only there for 2 days.
Did you find anything surprising in Build Conference this year?
You know, I'm going to say something that's a little odd that I found surprising. It wasn't any particular session or any technology. It was more that the first day keynote, which was by Steve Ballmer, which we didn't know right up until the time we came to Build. We didn't know who the keynoter was going to be, and it was absent from the schedule. He keynoted day one, and I think in the long years I've covered Microsoft, probably like close to 30 years now, it was the best Steve Ballmer keynote I've ever seen.
Okay, that's
so that was surprising.
And he had the added advantage of giving everybody there a slate, which always makes people receptive.
Yep, all the paying attendees, they got three things. It was like an Oprah moment, right? So they got the 100 gigabytes of SkyDrive storage for free, a card for that. They got a Surface RT, which is the one running Windows RT that's out now. Mm-hmm. And they all got unlocked Lumia 920 phones, which was really cool because those hadn't even really been out in the wild very much, and that was a nice surprise, I think.
It was great. And I have to tell you, having worked for Microsoft for 5 years and not being eligible, being a paying attendee this year was a terrific thing. So that was great fun.
Yeah.
Don't mean to rub it in on the two of you.
We did not get them.
Yes, I know.
I know. I was like, oh. But, you know, I actually think it's good the press didn't get it because that brings up a whole number of issues around ethics and, you know, is Microsoft buying people off, which I don't think they need to deal with that. So it's good they didn't give those to us, I think.
But you have played with the Surface and looked at the Surface.
Yep. Well, I actually bought
one. And actually, I saw you have a signed one, right? I saw you get a picture with the signature on the box there.
Yep. On day one, because I also was at the Windows 8 launch this year in New York, since I live in New York, it was easy for me. I went and checked out the Surface that day because I had never actually gotten any hands-on time with it and decided, you know what, I like it enough to take a chance on it and buy it. So I went to the pop-up store in Times Square that first night, and I bought one. And when I came to pick it up, Panos Panay, who heads the Surface team, was there in the store. And somebody who recognized me said, let's get him to sign your Surface. So he signed mine. And I got one of the numbered signed Surfaces. They signed the outside box.
That is very cool. And you're in New York, so let me just stop and say, are you okay with the hurricane?
Yeah. Luckily, because of Build and the Windows Phone 8 launch and all, I was out of town the whole week when Sandy had hit here. And if I had been here, it would have been pretty bad because my building lost power and water for the entire week. And I live on the 16th floor, so it would have been a long walk up.
Oh, that's a bad thing. So that's another advantage of Build this year.
Yep.
So you bought your own Surface, and I know from tweeting with you that you like it. Are there limitations to it that you've run into already, or other issues that you found with it, or are you generally happy?
You know, it's funny. I've been reading. There have been so many Surface reviews, and I haven't written mine yet because I'm trying to figure out exactly what I want to say. But I think I went into the Surface with probably the right set of expectations. I knew that it couldn't run existing Windows apps, which I guess some people didn't know when they bought it. I knew that the touch keypad was not going to be super optimized for me from day one, although it's been a lot better than I expected right out of the box. And in fact, I haven't even bought one of the other keypads yet, the type one, because I'm trying to see if I can just live with the touch one. So I like both of those things. I like the kickstand. I like the quality of the device. There aren't a whole lot of apps in the Windows Store yet that I really am finding compelling. But, you know, when I hear people say that and they're like, yeah, there's no apps. But I had an iPad and I bought an iPad at Generation 1. And I, to this day, never have found a lot of iPad apps that I find compelling either. So I guess I'm just not an apps person. For me, that's not a big limitation.
You said one thing in passing I just want to bring you back to, which was about mm-hmm. people's expectations. And I know that ZDNet and perhaps you wrote some articles about whether the store had folks who were trained well enough to inform folks well enough. How was your experience by the time you actually bought it?
Well, I think I had a special experience given that I went on day one to the store that was the store for the launch. So I have to say my experience was great, and the people who were in the store on that night really knew all about the Surface, knew that what it could and couldn't do. They didn't know who I was, which was even better, so I could kind of go as an incognito shopper, and I asked a lot of questions just to see what they would say, and they were very well informed. I was happy with how they handled everything and how they explained things.
So the key question that I really have been looking forward to asking you is whether you see Windows 8 as a huge departure. Is it as big a departure as folks have been saying? I've heard folks say that it's the biggest change in Windows since Windows. And do you think that Microsoft in some ways is betting the farm on it?
So I should say I'm one of these people who I like Windows 8 and Windows RT on touch tablets, but I'm not that keen on it on my existing laptop. So I have not upgraded my Windows 7 laptop to Windows 8. And one reason is I feel like it works just fine with Windows 7 on it. I know that there are certain performance enhancements that I could get by putting Windows 8 on it, like under the cover kind of enhancements. But I am very much accustomed to using a mouse and a keyboard in a certain way and having my apps be able to be docked in a certain way. And I just don't want to disrupt my work environment. So I've tried Windows 8 on other machines, but I just don't think it for me that it's going to be very productive as my main work environment.
And is that a danger to Microsoft that a lot of folks will feel that way and Windows 8 will sputter?
I don't think Windows 8 is going to do all that well in the business world right off the bat for sure, and maybe not for a long time. I think a lot of businesses are just right now in the midst of upgrading to Windows 7, and I doubt that they're going to suddenly switch gears and move wholeheartedly into Windows 8, especially because I think once they see it, they'll be like, wow, there's going to be a huge retraining curve required here. And I don't know if I want to spend all that money retraining employees to use Windows 8.
So what is Microsoft making the wrong bet, or is their bet on consumers and the tablet market?
I don't feel qualified to say for sure, like, I think they've made the wrong bet because I think it remains to be seen if everyone agrees or the majority of people agree with the way I'm seeing the world. And I'm not so presumptuous to think that I'm seeing it the best way. I think a lot of younger users who are seeing Windows 8 for the first time are like, wow, it's really cool. I like it. It's so much better and more fun than Windows 7 is. But I think for people who are just trying to get work done, and, you know, to be truthful, the audience that drives most of Microsoft's sales are enterprises, not consumers at this point in Microsoft's life. Those people, I think, are going to have to think twice before they bring Windows 8 into their work organizations. I think the unknown card here is how much will the whole bring your own device trend affect Microsoft and Windows one way or the other. If people start bringing Windows 8 tablets and PCs in and IT has to support them, then that may accelerate more quickly the adoption curve. But if that doesn't happen as quickly or IT box and won't let people bring them in for some reason, then I think it'll be a much slower adoption curve than Microsoft and some others may think.
You know, as you're saying that, I definitely see what you're saying. There's some differences in how Windows 7 and Windows 8 work in a work environment. But I was just wondering there if you see it as possible or likely that an enterprise or, you know, line of business apps might be like there may be advantages for building those and distributing those as, you know, modern store apps or whatever they're called. Exactly. But, you know, like deployment has always been kind of a pain with Windows and for internal apps. I'm wondering if that might, you know, like some people might embrace that in the enterprise space.
Yeah, you know, when I've been talking to enterprise customers, a lot of them say, I hear that there is going to be a story for us to get our apps sideloaded and to have more business apps in the store and have a way that we can control what users can put on the desktop. But I don't think Microsoft's really pushed on that story that hard so far. So I don't think people really understand how that works. Right now in the store, there are not very many what I would call business apps. And we're starting to see some of the enterprise software vendors talk about what they've got coming for Windows 8 and Windows RT on the app front. So Microsoft CRM team, for example, has said by mid-2013, they're going to have a version of Microsoft Dynamics CRM that works on Windows 8. Workday has been talking this up. SAP has been talking it up. So there are apps coming. But I think right now, if you go and look in the store, most everything that's in the Windows Store right now, it's games, it's entertainment, it's like weather apps and cookbook apps. So I think if you're just kind of out there kicking the tires right now, you're like, would this make sense for me to put line of business apps in there? I mean, Office is there on the Windows RT devices, for example, but there are a lot of licensing kind of restrictions around that. So you can use the version of Office that's on Windows RT for consumer usage, but you can't technically use it for business unless you have somewhere in your organization a license for Office 365 or a software assurance agreement. Then you're covered and you can do that. But there are all these kind of little wrinkles, I think, that still need to be worked out before businesses would feel that they really can go in and adopt Windows 8 in a happy and wholehearted way, I think.
Let's talk about the Windows Store apps from a developer perspective. Microsoft, at last year's build, was certainly pushing hard on the HTML JavaScript side as opposed to the XAML C# side. And I felt that they did so again this year. Yet my experience looking at books and articles and the interest in controls, third-party controls and so forth, is that the overwhelming majority of folks who are building Windows 8 applications right now are building it for XAML and C#. So my only theory is that Microsoft is assuming that the XAML programmers, the WPF programmers, will come over automatically and that they're trying to expand into the HTML market. But how do you see that balance?
Yep, I totally see it the way you're seeing it. Last year at Build in 2011, the whole message was you can do anything you want, but it would be best if you did HTML, JavaScript, and C++. And I think the message is the same this year. But the developers I've talked to a number of people who've built Windows 8 apps or are about to launch Windows 8 apps into the store. The vast majority of those I talk to are using XAML and C#. So I think Microsoft's saying, you know, okay, we're going to let you guys do this and we're going to keep supporting you doing this, but it really would be best if you guys start learning HTML and JavaScript and you think about making that the next way that, if you're doing future apps, that's what you're going to bet on as your platform. There is a little bit of a disconnect for sure in terms of what Microsoft's optimal view is and where they want developers to be and where they really are right now.
And how does that carry over to Windows 8 Phone? What are your impressions there of how much that is similar to Windows 8 and how much cross-compiling you're going to be able to do and so forth?
I went to one session at Build about how much code reuse there can be between the two platforms. And the message was from the presenters that there's a huge amount of overlap, not in the user interface code, but inside of the business logic and the other parts of the app, and that you shouldn't feel like you have to redo everything from scratch. That if you've done a Windows 8 app, you can think about easily bringing that to Windows Phone 8 and vice versa. When I talked to a few developers after this session and I looked at some of the comments up on sites after the session, people were saying, yeah, I know that's what they're saying, but I'm not so sure I believe it. And I don't think it's as easy as they're making it look and not as clear cut as they're making it sound. So the goal for Microsoft and why they're kind of pulling developers through this painful middle period, I think, is they want to make developers' lives easier on the other side. But between now and that point, when there really is a true common tool set and when the APIs really are all the same, if that ever does actually happen, there's going to be a lot of developer angst, I think. But the goal is good. The goal is to make it simpler and have a unified tool set, have a unified user interface, have the same kernel. So all those things are great goals. and they're part of the way there, but they're not all of the way there. And I think that's why we're seeing this kind of these growing pains among developers deciding, do I stay with Microsoft and bet on the new thing with them and go with them forward? Or am I going to kind of hold back and be kicking and screaming and say, I'm not learning anything new. I don't like what you're doing, and I'm going to just stay where I am.
Well, that also raises the question that Windows Phone 7 never quite got the market penetration that developers were hoping for. And do you see anything in Windows Phone 8 that's going to change that, that's going to make Windows Phone a real contender in the mobile market?
We do. I should say, I'm a Windows Phone user, and I've been since the beginning of the platform, since Windows Phone 7 launched. We always joke, we are the 3%, because it's about 3% market share right now worldwide. I think we should have t-shirts with that, actually. I think it'd be good. So yeah, it's difficult because, you know, it's almost like a chicken and egg, right? There aren't very many apps in the store. There's like now 120,000 apps in the Windows Phone store. And when you talk to developers about, are you doing an app for Windows Phone? They say, well, there's only 3% market share, so why should I? But what they need to have happen to get more market share is have more apps in the store. So they've been trying to incent developers to write for the platform and come out with tools to make it easier for them to write for the platform and to also port iOS and Android apps over to the platform. So that's all good stuff. With the feature set of Windows Phone 8 and the new phones that are coming, I think they've got a better lineup for people that might attract some customers who've never given Windows Phone a look. I've been using the loaner device I got from the Windows Phone launch, which is an HTC 8X, so the flagship HTC phone that's going to be on Verizon, AT&T, and T-Mobile. And I love this phone. It's a really great phone. So I'm pretty spoiled because right now I'm an HTC Trophy user, and I don't know if you guys have seen the Trophy. It's just kind of a brick that doesn't look like much. It's just utilitarian. It's there. But I've been using this phone around town. I used it when I was in Las Vegas, when I was in Seattle, and now here in New York. And I keep getting stopped by people saying, wow, what is that? That's a really nice phone. Even one guy, when I was in Las Vegas recently, I was sitting at a sushi bar next to him, and he was looking at the phone and asking me about it. And, you know, it's just one anecdote, right? But he was an iPhone 5 user, and he's like, I actually would look at this over an iPhone. I think this looks better. And, you know, just a few minutes with the phone, looking at it, playing with it. But up until this point, there weren't very many Windows phones that you could say would make somebody who was an iPhone user even take a look. There was the Nokia Lumia line, which is a really nice set of phones too. But now at least there's going to be some choice. There's going to be the new Ative from Samsung, which is a pretty nice phone. I got to see that when I was at the Windows Phone 8 launch. There's the HTC phones, there's the 8X, 8S, and then there's a line of Nokia phones coming, the 920, which is exclusive to AT&T. And they've got some mid-range phones coming to some of the other carriers too from Nokia. And as you'd expect, the Nokia phones have really amazing cameras, and they have all the good Nokia first-party apps that people really like. So I feel like there's things now that at least offer customers who might be considering a choice something to look at. Before, there just wasn't a whole lot to show them if they were even thinking about switching off Android or iOS.
Well, I can tell you that within less than a day of owning the 920, I moved my SIM card from my iPhone to my 920. That was an easy call. It's just nice. A beautiful phone, and it has an extraordinary camera and an extraordinary display. One of the other major themes at Build this year was Azure, which is near and dear to John's heart. What was your takeaway overall on what was presented in the second day's keynote and generally about Azure?
Yeah, I think it's good that Microsoft's talking up Azure more to developers. You know, we don't really know how well or not well Azure's doing because Microsoft's been very reluctant to release any kind of numbers where you could gauge, you know, are they meeting quota? Are they not meeting quota? Are they really making any inroads against AWS and some of the other cloud platforms? So it kind of goes, we've had to rely on developer word of mouth to figure out how is it doing and what is it doing, what developers want, and delivering the kind of capabilities that they think are compelling. So I think Microsoft's decision to really play up the mobile services, which are the new mobile toolkits for Azure, was a really good decision. The message there is if you're a developer, you're developing not just for Windows Phone, but for iOS or Android, you can use Azure as your backend, and we're going to give you some tools that it's going to make it much easier for you to do that when you're creating your app and you want to rely on the cloud for part of your app. So they play that up a lot at the show, and I think that was a good choice. It's something that appeals to people who are on other platforms, and the whole cross-development story is a good one. They also talked up a lot some of the capabilities in ASP.NET. They had Scott Guthrie doing his thing there, and that was really good because developers love Scott Guthrie. And, you know, everybody was really into what he had to present. He was doing some demos and coding, and people loved all that. So that was a good thing. They're not talking up too much some of the stuff they're doing around the persistent virtual machines on Azure. I think they could talk that up even more, but maybe they feel like they've already presented that. So the idea there is if you are a developer and you want to actually host your applications either on Windows Server or on Linux even in an Azure virtual machine, Microsoft's going to support you doing that now. So that gives them a much better play against Amazon, who's basically owned that market with their IaaS, infrastructure as a service. Wow, that's hard to say. and now Microsoft's right in there with their own capability there. They're dropping pricing to be very competitive against Amazon. So I think they're doing a lot of good things to really try to give developers more of a choice and not for them to have to say, oh, the only reason I would go with Azure is I'm ready to write an app from scratch or make some really huge changes to my code in order to get it to work on Microsoft's platform as a service. I think they're starting to make the message be more compelling to people and make them feel that they don't have to give up a lot to get in on some of the benefits of Windows Azure.
Giving John a little bit of space there to see if he wanted to follow up on on the Azure piece.
No, it's I agree. It's all a lot of fun. And partly I'm recently moved into the Azure organization because I finally like it as a developer. I never really felt like it was doing things that it wasn't solving my problems before. And I got to be behind the scenes with Scott Guthrie as he was, you know, preparing his keynote and, you know, as we were getting ready for it. And the big scary thing with that was we were uploading video over Wi-Fi to mobile services.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, I mean, there's everything could go right, but a Wi-Fi at a conference is you know, scary. Yeah. So, but it all worked. There was
yeah, he
a
seemed
lot of
very
cheering
relieved
backstage.
When that demo worked. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The other cool thing was the Azure Store. I thought I wrote a bit about that when Microsoft showed that off because you know you hear Microsoft talking more and more about stores. So you got the Windows Store, you've got the Office Store, the SharePoint Store, the Windows Phone Store, and now you have an Azure Store. So if you're a developer and you want to actually use something from a third party, especially like MongoLab or SendGrid or AppDynamics, any of these kind of software or services that are from other parties and you want to bring them into your development environment in the cloud, they're all going to be there in a store that's integrated with the Azure management portal. So that I thought was a very nice thing to be doing too for developers and making it seem like, again, Microsoft's not just betting totally on their own software and their own products, but they're open to third-party products and even open source products. So that was a good message too.
Before we end, was there anything else that you saw as very significant at Build that we haven't touched upon?
Yeah, one of the things I was really excited about was how Microsoft is allowing developers to increase their Windows Phone app performance through this compiling in a cloud idea. There were a couple of sessions about that at Build, and they were talking up this new, I guess you call it a technology they have. It's called MDIL. It's Machine Dependent Intermediate Language. And it's not NGEN. A lot of people thought that's how Microsoft was going to do that. But instead, they're taking developers' apps, they're compiling them themselves, and then they're running them back down to the device. By doing this, I'm kind of talking as a non-developer about some very geeky developer things here. That's why I'm not being as coherent as I should. But it sounds like this is something that's going to increase performance on devices and help developers without having to do any extra steps themselves because Microsoft's doing this on the back end and you don't do it as a developer, that you're going to have better performing apps pre-compiled for you by Microsoft in the cloud.
That's very cool, but it's also kind of amazing that the performance, that the latency is good enough that they can get a boost in performance even though they have to run that back down to the device. We've come a long way from 2400 baud modems.
Definitely so. Yeah. So that's an interesting presentation. And I wrote about that this week, and I noticed a lot of people who hadn't known Microsoft was doing this or hadn't heard about this were like, wow, that is actually cool. And that's actually something that's making me a little more interested as a developer, that Microsoft's doing the backend work for me and that I wouldn't have to do that part and my performance could be optimized. Even if I have an older, like Windows Phone 7.x app, I could have this run through this cloud compiler and hopefully have better performance when my app is running on Windows Phone 8.